got him stopped this morning.
I mean, I know it. It's like Riptide or something.
No! Cagney and Lacey.
Oh, yeah. Cagney and Lacey. Right.
Time for another edition of Ride at Home, brought home to you by Green State Credit Union, as we talk real estate with local realtor Bon Vivant, man about town.
Hi.
Matt Carzalotti.
Good morning.
How are you?
And I'm good.
He's not a lawyer.
Still not a lawyer.
Still not.
Nope.
Still not. Oh, my. This is also being live streamed on Facebook at RE/MAX Partners Realty Facebook page.
That's right. Yep. Yep. So if you really want to see the behind
chipper
the scenes.
Face behind the scene there.
My God. It's got quite the following sometimes. It's
it does.
Weird.
That's yeah. Nice. Yeah. So anyway.
Anywho.
How
yeah.
are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm not unwell, thank you.
That's also good.
It is.
That's very good.
It is.
Yeah. Unwell. Unfit. No thanks.
No.
Yeah.
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. So what are we going to talk about? We're bouncing around a couple ideas here, Bob Mike.
Hmm.
It's like, well, we could dive into that, but we can't necessarily talk specifically here about that. So
sure.
Pick your poison.
Well, commercial real estate is kind of fascinating. We talked a lot about that.
Yeah, because you don't see a lot of for sale signs out in front of businesses.
Right.
Or commercial properties.
Well, I mean, that's just it. I mean, that comes down to like kind of like a different thing of like, well, if it's for sale, is there a sign on the property, right?
Right.
And for commercial, sometimes.
Yeah.
Not every time.
If it's an empty building, a lot of times you'll
see
that.
But you get to like apartment buildings and things too. And right. It's like, well, do you really want to scare the beans out of all your tenants and put a for sale sign in the front yard?
So, let's first talk about the definition then. What is commercial real estate? What is commercial properties?
Pretty much anything that's not owner occupied for residential, right? Commercial real estate is a broad category. So you're talking about even ag kind of falls within into it to a point. So multifamily, industrial property, warehouse property, because industrial and warehouse are different.
Really?
Yeah. And then you're talking about restaurant as well. Multi-use. And so kind of like the buildings that I own, right, are like they're multi-use, which is there's residential apartments, and then there's also, you know, retail or office business. Office, medical, that's another one. And with like the ever-changing healthcare and hospitals, all of those things. I mean, healthcare, medical buildings are always kind of running through.
Where does radio station / Hovel fall in on that?
Yeah, no.
No?
No.
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 Okay. No, that.
Yeah, this is a.
We're a complete subset unto ourselves.
Yeah, you guys are. You got like the coat hangers on the roof, man. I mean, so. Yes, mommy dearest. So, no. There's so many different things for commercial. And then even once you're. Like, even as I'm, like, practicing commercial real estate, one of the things that comes up all the time, which is, like, you know, how many new different versions of this do I have to learn, right?
Right.
Because to do a hotel or hospitality is completely different from everything else. To do multifamily, completely different from everything else, you know, which is an apartment building. To do, you know, industrial or, you know, bare land, all of it. All of it's different. And they all have different pieces that go with it, right? There's different financials that are required to be able to kind of evaluate. There's their own submarkets for them. And so you kind of have to be aware of what those submarkets are to be able to put together values and create valuation. It's all really different. And so it's funny because I think about like regular residential real estate. When we all think of like realtors, we think of real estate agents, we think of real estate brokers. You know, we all think of the same thing, right? We're thinking of like, you know, whatever you see on HGTV with somebody with a gray paintbrush, you know, while they're installing their stone countertops, right? I mean, it's all, that's what we think of.
Right.
And the incredible variety of what commercial is like, so much different. Couldn't be more different. Even like the professionals are completely different, right? So usually for residential, we end up with like these very, you know, boisterous kind of like big personality people that can kind of navigate and really are one-on-one, do a lot of work with people. And commercial, some of those people don't see daylight, you know? I mean, they're locked in a box with the, you know, with the kind of the Joe versus the volcano fluorescent lights, you know, right?
Nice analogy.
It's true, you guys. No, but no, I mean, it's a different thing. And so the professionals that you kind of encounter throughout it are also really different than regular real estate. It's fascinating. I mean, I really get a kick out of it.
Is there most people who deal with this, then are they specifically commercial real estate agents?
Most of them, yeah.
That's all they do versus...
The license is the same.
Okay.
The license to sell, you know, mom and pop house down the road versus, you know, I don't know, half a city block in, you know, downtown Des Moines. Same license.
Okay.
Same real estate license. But, same regulating body, too, for those two incredibly different jobs,
oh,
right?
Oh, so the rules are all the same then?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there's still, like, different professional organizations that they could, you know, opt into or out of that may have their own set of, you know, guidelines or standards or ethics or whatever that could be in a higher force or higher effect, usually voluntary in their participation.
Like the MLS.
Right. So multiple listing service, right?
Right.
And so multiple listing service with commercial, that's a whole other thing. But multiple listing service is actually, it's a nonprofit. Most people don't think of that, but it totally is. It's this nonprofit.
Okay.
It's run by a board. And the reason that was actually founded to begin with was to make sure that realtors and real estate agents play well with one another, right? And so for example, my license as a real estate broker in state Iowa, I can show any house that's actively listed by another real estate broker. However, that doesn't guarantee me that I'm going to be getting compensated for that. I know, how crazy is that, right? And so what that MLS does is it actually provides some sort of accountability in making sure that me as that buyer's agent bringing that buyer to this property represented by this particular real estate agent, that there is funds available to be able to compensate me or my office for our role in that transaction and our labor through that transaction. It's a lot of work. People don't actually realize it's actually really complicated. And so that MLS does, it actually requires to have a disclosed amount published between, offices for these listings to make sure that there's an understanding of what that compensation looks like before they begin to do anything. And so that's a really important, actually. I think it's actually really useful. And it kind of equalizes everything. That's its first thing. The next part is like they're usually all kind of set up through, like in Iowa, the Iowa Association of Realtors is, I believe, the primary host for what those multiple listing services look like. And I haven't seen anything other than that. And then, so you end up with like kind of subsets of what those MLSs are. Now, one commercial gets to MLS, which is kind of different too, Tim, right? So, is it the same thing as like, hey, you know, there's that house on, you know, whatever, Broad Street that's for sale versus, oh, there's that hotel or hospital or, you know, whatever that's for sale. Those same requirements still translate across, and that company, the listing company, and disclosing what their cooperating brokerage is to that buyer's office. Bizarre. Now, and great, because typically there aren't a lot of dedicated just commercial real estate firms that are members of MLSs. Now that MLS, and I know it sounds complicated, people think about what MLSs are, they kind of have a preconceived notion of what they think it is. They don't usually think of it as an organization. They usually think of it as, well, it's just a website that my stuff goes on when my stuff's for sale, right?
Right.
Now, that MLS actually also takes all of that data, that aggregate data, and then it distributes it out as well. So that property, as it's that data is actually being sold. So that data is being sold to Zillow. It's being sold to, like, CoStar, which is a commercial real estate type of Zillow. It's being sold to, you know, all these different places, right? So that they can distribute that and remarket and republish and whatever, and it ends up with a larger circulation. I mean, a lot of offices will always say, oh my God, if you list your stuff here, it goes on all these websites. It does for anybody who's an MLS member. And I always get a kick out of that marketing ploy. I'm like, come on. Yeah. You and everybody else. Now that commercial side for, like, the closest thing that there's for a commercial MLS is something called LoopNet. LoopNet is pretty much a monopoly. They kind of have the whole kind of ball of wax for the U.S. and a lot of international as well. So that most of those commercial listings are pretty much published right there. There's a couple of other ones too. There's like Crexy and a couple of little, I don't know, I think it's a commercial real estate exchange, I think it's something like that. There's a couple of other intermediate sites that do actually archive, hold on to, and distribute. You have to pay for those memberships. But they're really expensive, very, very expensive, from an industry perspective. And so LoopNet tends to be really this incredible, like, breadth, like, of their amount of data it's amazing. They'll even go backwards on data. They'll even go backwards and do research on all these past sales so that they can kind of, like, feel, kind of light the Christmas tree, so to speak, right? I don't know, it's a strange thing to think of, but it's like that. It's like, imagine, like, you only have a couple of lights on the tree, and then suddenly you can light the rest of it. And what that does is, what I'm saying is like, it actually fills in the background for comparable data for certain different parts of the country. And then that way, it actually helps those properties become more sellable.
Mm-hmm.
Because now there's, you know, more competitive, comparable comp data for those sales. And so when those properties are now listed, it also makes it easier to be able to convey them. So it's usually an improving market condition kind of thing. Now, there's also no guaranteed compensation within those. So having to figure out the commercial real estate role of like how you have to try to finagle getting paid for, especially for those you know, those offers are incredibly complicated. But it's there's no real guarantee until you put something in writing for compensation. So it's like, imagine negotiating your job every day. And that's commercial. Every day you actually have to kind of get it in writing, figure it out. I mean, it's a gig type contract. It's like this one thing, right? And then you have to kind of fill up your aggregate for the year from all your gigs. And at the end, that's, you know, end of the year when you're doing your taxes, and you're like, wow, that was a lot of work. Trying to figure all that out.
LoopNet.
It's owned by CoStar, and they're based out of D.C.
Is it going to become self-aware at any point and
it thinks
send
like
the T-3000 back in time to
probably
take out Matt Cardzolotti?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I know you're coming for me.
You're right at home with Matt Cardzolotti. We're going to check some numbers. We have them. Hopefully they're legible.
I'll be back.
Yeah. Right at Home, brought to you by Green State Credit Union.
University of Iowa Community Credit Union is now Green State Credit Union. Their name has changed, but their commitment to serving their members and communities remains the same. At Green State, you'll find the same great low-rate loans, including home, home equity, and auto loans. They're also the number one auto and mortgage lenders in Iowa. Stop by their branch in downtown Grinnell. Call 236-1818 or visit greenstatecu.org. It's your community, and they're still your credit union.
Back on Right at Home with Matt Cardzolotti as we crunch some numbers.
Well,
let's see here.
I can see them. Awesome.
Awesome. All right.
I got new glasses, by the way.
Did you?
Yeah, that was really awesome. I can actually see these pretty well.
Nice.
All right. Last week, pretty low numbers. We had an incredible one closing. I actually do know there's more closings today, so it'll probably be a bit more normal of a week. But we had five last week, the previous week, and we had six the week before that. And really, I think that this week is very much going to be the same. That's just, I think it's a matter of timing and schedule. So,
okay.
Our pendings are up actually not too bad as well. We had seven pendings, and I love seeing pendings come through. Pendings are kind of like, you know, we're kind of filling up our market to make sure that our market stays active, to make sure that our finances, and as an office, you know, with incredible expenses every month, it's nice to see those pendings out there, because it's like, hey, we all still have jobs for a few more months. New listings, 13 new listings, which is awesome, because that's actually our highest amount we've had for new listings in about 5-6 weeks. So
yeah,
there's more, and I even though there's snow on the ground, I know there's going to be more. And so and quite frankly, due to like our average time on market is still so low, you know, even at this point, I wouldn't usually recommend it for November, but I don't know, I might try an end of the year listing at this point, and the percentage of list sales is actually still really high too. So you never know. I mean, you might end up having to move out in the holidays, but and that could suck. So our total amount listed, 123, is that accurate?
123.
Okay.
Which was the same as it was last week.
Right, right. Exactly the same. However, our days on market did go up by 3 days. So up from 151 to 154 days.
But still, that's hovering there. I mean, the needle on that hasn't budged.
It's a very stable market right now. And this is so strange because, like, so if you look at the graph, Tim, you can kind of see, too, like, really from, like, June through now, look at the stability. I mean, there's been a little up and down in time on market. There's been a little up and down in total amount listed. But for the most part, it's been really, really stable. And so once, you know, our market finally opened up from kind of our horrible, long, cold, wet winter, spring from, you know, 18 into 19, you know, it kind of just kind of found its spot and it stayed pretty consistent. It didn't go crazy by any means, but it's been steady, so...
Yeah, about middle of May is when it kind of just, looking at the graph there, it looks like that's when it kind of kicked in there.
Right. And then and the graph we're looking at, too, is available, of course, on myiowainfo.com. And this is actually every week what I do is I just put together all the sales data that I can from really about six different sources. It takes a little while. And I kind of cross-check, and I have to make adjustments, and I have to go back. I actually have to go back retro, too, and adjust. Because it's true, because as those, you know, a lot of that data is not put in at that day. I mean, so sometimes offices or even the county will actually be reporting these things a little bit later than they've happened, and so I have to go back and adjust a little bit.
I'm looking at a wowzer number here, though, because the October numbers, you didn't have the October finals, and now you do. And
yeah.
That's kind of a wow.
There's some big numbers in October.
Yeah, that's... That's amazing.
Yeah, but I mean, it's interesting when you kind of can contrast those with previous years of what October looks like. You know, significant difference. However, but when you look at the total production from those years and you see what their spring and their early summer is like, it actually just kind of we pushed our year ahead, right? And so rather than having our spring, early summer that we should have, All we really did is kind of like move this, you know, into the, you know, kind of late summer, early fall, and now into early winter as we're getting some, you know, snow on the ground. So I think that's where part of those numbers for October are coming from. But no, statistically, really unusual to see high sales numbers for October. Now, strange side effect. This is kind of cool. So when you get an appraisal for your house, right, you're buying a house, have to get an appraisal, and that appraiser goes out, actually validates the sale price, which is what their job is to validate, not to establish sale price appraisers. What they do is they come out with, they have to go back within 6 months and pull comparable sales comps, right? Mm-hmm. They have to have these comps in order to be able to put the together that appraisal.
Right.
And there'll be three sales and three actives of the most comparable, you know, properties that they can find to validate that sale price. Now, the cool thing is when we start end up having months like this in October or November, and we end up with really high sales numbers for October and November, that actually affects next year's market. So pretty cool, because they're going to go back, you know, usually just 6 months if they can. If they're low on inventory, there's a small amount of data available, then they'll go back a year. And so the cool thing is what happens is because we end up having good high sale numbers at the end of the year or even in the winter, rather than only when the sun is shining, we end up with sales that would happen and that appraise at a higher value in times like January or in times like March, when if they go back 6 months, they're in the middle of winter, or they're at a time of the year, or they're at an early fall when it's starting to slow down, and now those numbers are high. So this is a good side effect. I mean, this actually could really help next year quite a bit, especially for, you know, really anything that's kind of pushing, you know, the value envelope at all.
You can see all these numbers,
yeah,
as Matt said, on our website, myiowainfo.com, where you'll also find an archived version of this program.
That's right.
And, of course, it's always live streamed every Friday morning on Facebook at RE/MAX Partners Realty.
Yeah, we record one once in a while, but yeah, usually live streamed.
There you go. All righty, and that'll do it. Till next week, same bat time, same bat station. For Matt Cargelotti, I'm Tim Dill for Right at Home, brought to you by Green State Credit Union here on 1410 KGRN.